You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this beautiful sunshiny day here in Southern California. And we have a great story to tell this morning. And it begins in a universe very, very near and not long ago, when two giants decide to take each other on, Amazon and Google. And out of that came the young David, equipped with a slingshot and a few pebbles. Josh Kreitzer built the first Amazon advertising agency, and in doing that, frees up an entire cadre of people to succeed in business. So welcome, Josh.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So tell me more about this whole Channel Bakers thing.
Sure. So on the outset, I love that beginning narrative. That was fantastic. that is very much the story. But on the outset, you know, when we look at Channel Bakers on the name, I get asked that question quite a bit. The name comes from the mindset that we're not here as an agency to help brands shift market share or share from one retailer to the next, and vice versa. Retailers should not be telling us as a brand how they're going to take share away from some of my other retail partners, right? At the end of the day, our strategy and mindset is growing the dough across every channel. So we want to grow the dough, and that's where the fun baking analogy came from. So Channel Bakers kind of came from the mindset of, like, we want to help you absolutely with Amazon. I think that in the landscape of today's e-commerce realm, they are the one everybody's talking about. They are the internet retailer that people are absolutely bringing top of mind. There are a lot of best practices that I've leveraged over my career, but that we now scale and offer to our clients. And then absolutely Amazon paid search in the beginning, and now Amazon display advertising, and then Amazon going into the OTT, like broadcast television landscape, is a very exciting catalyst, if you will, for a manufacturer's growth and brand growth, not just, again, in the mindset of shifting all that share and business to Amazon. It's more about how can you leverage Amazon as a new ad platform to grow a brand overall, knowing that the most recent stat, and there's a number of stats, 72% of U.S. online shoppers go to Amazon first when they want to do product research. I mean, you've got to go where the shopper is, right?
Well, I mean, I've had to train myself to not sit there and befuddled, but simply Google it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's an ongoing development of habits. Sitting and asking, how do I repair this? Boom, here it is.
Sure.
And if that's not enough, here are 14 videos to train you how to do it better.
Exactly.
And then you get to choose between which of the 14 you're going to spend your time with. And by the way, then you can subscribe, and I'll show you how to repair your whole house.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and I think the fun part of that is shopper behavior trends are that's an entirely changing landscape. So that's we could probably spend an hour just talking about shopper behavior trends. I think the one, though, that I want to bring to light would be that as Gen Z begins to overtake millennials now going into, actually 2019 is the year where population size-wise, Gen Z, anybody born from 2000 to now, overtakes even millennials. Mm-hmm. But they also have discretionary income that we didn't think that they did. So they have a lot of online buying power. The way that they're digesting content and learning about products and brands is definitely something to keep top of mind.
Right.
But then also the mindset that they are, and you'll hear this said, that they're less brand loyal. But for some of them, it's a matter of just discovery. Think about Sears. Everybody knew Sears. Sears was the largest retailer.
My son was a district manager for Sears on the East Coast.
For them, they just need to know, what are the brands? Who are the brands, right? But some of them are very obvious. You walk into a Best Buy, you see a Samsung, you see an LG, you see a Sony. Some of those are still very top of mind. But if you were the number one, let's call it, air purifier company for years, if that audience doesn't know who you are in a sea of, by the way, 1,000 brands on Amazon now, thanks to the likes of Alibaba and others now bringing the opportunity for people who, you know, want to create their own brand, they can do that overnight. Now there's 1,000 air purifier brands on Amazon, right?
Well, how important is brand?
Oh, wow. That's a really powerful question. I think when I get asked that question, but I also get asked, like, so Amazon doing their own Amazon Basics and their own private label, how does that all play together? And when do they become your frenemy, if you will? I think the mindset there is brand important? Absolutely. So long as you're not just a me too, you're actually doing something truly innovative. So that's what I love, you know, looking at some of these. I love to just fund Kickstarters all the time because some of these guys are just going, hey, here's a product and I just wanted to make it better, right? And if you think about how did Amazon become Amazon, well, in a time in history when we were all scared of putting our credit card on the internet, Jeff Bezos said, I'm going to solely focus on the customer experience. And he built trust with the American consumer because he just wanted to make that shopping experience amazing. And oh, by the way, he launched product reviews. Brand then for him became extremely important because now when you look at the brands America trust, Amazon is there. Looking at innovation and brands on Amazon, if you want to sell your brand and become a brand, you've got to truly innovate. You've got to do something different. I would say Jeff wasn't necessarily disruptive as much as he said, hey, there's something that this model could be better. How do I make it better?
Yeah, yes. And my mentor, Dan Sullivan, says, we don't talk about disruption. You talk about disruption, you're going to be disrupted because sure. That's the world you're going to live in. He said, talk about transformation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's what Jeff Bezos did. He didn't he didn't disrupt my buying habits. He transformed them.
Yeah.
And I remember back when I was doing writing user's guides for Toshiba. I remember the very first time that Amazon was written about in the Wall Street Journal, and that afternoon I bought a book from Amazon. And that transformed my whole experience. And,
right.
And I was talking to you about dealing with my library. It occurred to me that I could get rid of all of my books in my library, because now I have a library, and all I have to pay is the subscription charges of if not Kindle,
yep.
You know, inexpensive. I could get the hardback the next 2 days.
Yep.
So it's like, there is my library. It's out there, not just a bookstore, but
yeah.
That's my access is right there. And I don't have to have 3,000 books in my house.
Exactly.
It's amazing, this whole transformation. Now, what I am very interested in, first, this whole idea of brand to me is a platform. The brand is a platform. And I don't buy a brand. I buy a solution to a problem that I want to solve, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And I mean, to me, 17 years of training salespeople and sales managers, that's what I learned, is that the first thing, you're not trying to get, if you're trying to get somebody to do something that they don't want to do, you're going to have an uphill battle.
Yep.
But if you really change your mindset to, my job is to find people and to disqualify people who don't, but to find people who have a problem that they want to solve. Now, a lot of people have the problems, but they don't want to solve it because it's not the high priority, don't have the money, don't have the time, don't have the resources. But they have the problem and they want to solve it, and they believe that you can help them.
Yep.
Right? So to me, that's what's transforming the whole, not only the marketing and sales world, but it's transforming the world that we find services in.
Yeah.
How? I mean, 20 years, the screens in my home in Laguna Beach have been sitting there rotting, right? And finally, it was 2 months ago when a brand new feral cat that we brought in pushed out the screen, ran out on the carport, came back, but the screen was on the carport. I went out to put it back, and it just dissolved in my hands. So for 2 months, that window did not have a screen on it, and we couldn't open it. Until finally, it said, wait a minute, Google Instant screen replacement.
Yep.
The next day, Freddie was there, did the job perfectly.
Yep.
Called me the day before, called me 5 minutes before. He's there. He measures. He says, 3 days later, I'll have the screens for you. Comes back, calls me the day before, comes back 5 minutes. Calls me 5 minutes before, comes in, puts the screens up, give me your credit card. He's gone.
Yep.
And I got these beautiful cat-resistant screens. Now that is a transformation.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, I'd have to go find a place, probably talk to two or three friends, find a place to come out, all of this stuff, but boom, it's done.
Yep.
Now, that is a transformation of customer buying.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you could even look at like Yelp as a review platform to help you identify, is this service provider a good one,
mm-hmm.
right? That's another transformation. So that mindset of reviews mm-hmm. in and of itself, I'll give Bezos credit for pioneering that concept. But mm-hmm. Long and short of it, absolutely, right? Reviews helped you make that decision, I'm sure, as well.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And now, so this whole notion of transforming the way that buyers buy
uh-huh.
has to have a correlation with transforming the way that sellers sell.
Indeed. Yeah.
And we're what I'm finding, and this is something I'd like to talk about and hear from you, is finding that the way that sellers sell used to be, I have to come up with enough capital, put together a business, got my business plan, go out and get the find a lease a space, and then buy all my inventory. That doesn't have to happen anymore.
Yeah.
Somebody can go into business without a business plan, without any space. Maybe you have to put up a website, but no, you really don't, do you?
Yeah.
You just go and say, Amazon, I'm coming.
Yeah, very well. Yeah.
Right?
I think that the big piece of that puzzle, too, is where you're going to find the product, too.
So but you don't have to have inventory.
For sure.
And you can have the inventory directly shipped to Amazon, drop shipped to Amazon. They will do the logistics for you. Amazing. And all you simply do is what? Sit back and make sure that it goes into your bank account.
Well, there's definitely a lot more to it than that. But indeed, I mean, that is so in the landscape of an entrepreneurial opportunity. Absolutely. I've got two friends, both of which have a very similar story. Both of which started on eBay and then moved into the landscape of Amazon. And today they have beautiful, thriving businesses doing anywhere from $65 to $100 million
a year. I'll bet you they don't own any real estate.
And they started at 16, by the way.
Right. No real estate.
Today, do they have real estate?
Do they have to have a big storefront?
No. One of them does because they sell bicycles. So they wanted to have a storefront, yeah.
But do they have to have a warehouse? They might. They can choose to, but they don't have to.
They don't have to. Absolutely.
Right? And it's all there for them now. Now, as an entrepreneurial operating system implementer, EOS implementer, my mentor was Gino Wickman, right? And Gino has moved beyond EOS. Now he's still an implementer and still does lots of good fun things with us, but his new project is called Leap, and this is to identify those young adolescent entrepreneurs who are being thrown out of school right now because school doesn't fit.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And identifying those entrepreneurs and then teaching them in his book that's coming out in October how to maximize the value of their God-given talent and skills as entrepreneurs.
That's awesome.
Now, that is where we have to connect,
yeah.
Channel Bakers.
For sure.
Right.
There's so many different ways that we could help that audience. Just even general best practices, a very basic 101 level to start, mm-hmm. What their first step should be, what is the phases of their business going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
Phase one, just getting going. Phase three, now you've got a thriving business. How do you keep it going?
Mm-hmm.
All of the above, right? And then phase four is how do you address potential shifts in the market? So there's that as well. So that sounds like a fun project.
Well, yeah. And to me, what it is number one is identifying these kids in school. And just at the Rotary Club this morning is a woman who put a thing together called Robin's Nest in the last 2 years. And what she identified was people in Huntington Beach initially, kids who were, sophomores, juniors in high school, where their family is so dysfunctional that it collapsed. I mean, they're out of their families, or the families are so dysfunctional that these kids are in danger of not completing high school. So she created a whole alternative network for them and places for them to live. It's amazing what she's done, but it's for 70 people. But she's making a difference in 70 people's lives. And I think as we begin to do that and help these kids find ways where their entrepreneurial talents are, number one, identified, so they're not put in places where they're going to fail.
Yeah.
Then putting them into a network of fellow entrepreneurs, which to me, when I went to Strategic Coach in Toronto, and my wife kids me about this, but when I went there, and with in 70 other people there with me and Dan Sullivan, I realized for the first time in my life, these are my people.
Awesome.
These are my people. Now, do they do the same thing I do? No. Are they from the same place? No. What do we have in common? We are all entrepreneurs. We're risking. We're taking responsibility. We're following through. We have huge ambition, huge vision. And that's what I think we should do with the kids that are out there who are this way right now. And they're not going to be going into the trades. They're not going to be going into starting off in a corporate world. They're not going to even be in a family business. They're going to be starting their own.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that, I think. If you look at the, Bloomberg just recently put out an article with regard to Gen Z, which is anybody born 2000 to now, right? They 23% of them feel, in this survey, of course, felt that they were more entrepreneurial than the previous generation. And if you look at YouTube celebrities as an example, that's a really good indicator that, yeah, absolutely, they can. I mean, the number one guy that made money on, or the number one top grossing YouTuber, I think it was 22 million last year, and his name is Dan TDM. He's a kid from the UK that plays video games, right? And that's completely new market, transformation in mindset of how they make money.
And I think it's a transformation in mindset about why they make the money.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that entrepreneurs make money for the value of money. I believe they're there to solve problems.
Absolutely.
And the byproduct is money. The scorecard, there might be a scorecard value to money, but it's we've solved the problems.
Yep.
That's the goal and the joy of an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
And I can see your eyes light up, so yeah. that's what we both enjoy doing.
Absolutely.
And that there's money there, that money is there to be used to solve more problems.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the big shift for, you might say, the residue of the baby boomers. Because when you look at the difference, you know, this big gap in income, that big gap is really put there by people for whom money was a very important thing. And I don't think money is that important anymore.
Tell that to a 16-year-old. but I agree with you 100%. I think it's about solving the solution. I think when, you know, if you've ever watched the Simon Sinek Golden Circle video, he talks about what gets you out of bed in the morning and why should anybody care?
Yes.
For entrepreneurs, it's, I want to solve a problem and I'm going to pour my life into solving that problem and then the money will come as a byproduct.
All right. So talk about the 16-year-old.
Yeah.
The 16-year-olds I watch do not say, I want to do that, therefore I'm going to go over here and earn a lot of money and then go do it.
Right.
What they say is, I want to do that. Now, how can I hack into it?
Yeah.
How can I do it with the resources I currently have? And if it's $1.15, how can I use that $1.15 to break through the obstacles?
Sure.
Right? It's not, well, I'm going to go over here and earn a couple thousand dollars a month and then bring that over here, and then I can spend my money to find this. That's a huge difference.
Absolutely. Certainly more resourceful. And yes. That was also in that Bloomberg article. I don't remember the percentage, but they said there was a percentage of them felt that they were more resourceful than the previous generation. So, yeah, I totally agree.
Well, see, and I think the things that I want to pick up on and help is to identify those kids who are otherwise going to be failing, all right? Because people are telling them, you can't do that. That's against the law. You shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
That's out of the norm. But to find that place for them, because in a real sense, the Marvel comics are our models, right?
Yeah.
It's this whole notion of we are supermen in our own way. And the world has told us we're not.
Right.
And the world has told us when we exhibit those, you shouldn't do that.
Right.
And in fact, there was a movie we saw. What was that? The Glass. Have you seen M. Night Shyamalan's Glass?
No, not yet.
Oh, it's a trilogy. It starts off with Unbreakable, then goes to Crisis, and then goes to Glass. And the whole point of his trilogy is that there are many supermen around, and that that there is a group of people whose job is to go around to stop them from exhibiting their superhuman abilities.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
And so you just you know what Chameleon is doing to me is just challenging me with that notion.
Yeah.
And then it's like, "Oh, we do that. We have institutions that are paid to do that. They're called schools." Right?
Yes, exactly.
And it's this whole conformity piece, which begins with, I don't care what you want, this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
And what I see in the 16 year olds is they don't believe that anymore.
Got it.
Right?
I 100% agree.
If I want that, I'm going to go get it.
Yep.
I may not have any money, but I don't need money.
Yeah.
I might need people. I might need resources, but a lot of it is just confidence.
Yep.
And commitment.
Yeah.
And I can get it.
Yeah. Also, I like to think, too, that there's books and things of that nature that they should be also subscribing to. So I think that's from a resourceful standpoint. Today, they've got YouTube, they've got Audible, they've got Blinkist, they've got a number of those types of resources. But you just reminded me of a book that I read the other day that I love, and I haven't read it in 10 years, but it was called The Dream Giver. And yes. It talked about the guy named Ordinary that was sitting on a couch that one day he woke up and had a dream and he started pursuing it. And people, all the naysayers, family, friends, everybody else were telling him, no, you can't do that. And then he didn't listen and continued to go on. Right. Mm-hmm. So those are the types of things that I think when we look at resources, we shouldn't put on the shelf. I thank you. Pun intended. But I think book reading and reading is something that if I was to encourage a young entrepreneur of, hey, I know that school may not necessarily fit within your landscape of what's working for you as an individual, but never give up reading, never give up improving yourself, never give up finding new ways to add value. And a lot of those new ways to add value oftentimes come from reading books, or in this case today, landscape, listening to them.
All right, so the challenge for you and me is to write those books.
Oh, that's fun.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's basically what Dan Sullivan did to me in a first conversation with him was I said to him, you know, I'm in a 10X program to 10 times what I'm doing, and that could be anywhere from 10Xing influence, 10Xing product, 10Xing revenue. It's dream big.
Right? Yeah.
And so I said to Dan, I said, Dan, 10X, you know, I'm 72, and what do I need to 10X anything for? I mean, I'm living the life that's very nice. I'm very comfortable. Why do we need to 10X anything? And he said, well, what do you expect to be doing? And I said, well, you know, next 3 to 5 years, I'll probably work with 50 different companies and help them with entrepreneurial operating system and help them transform their business, make it better. He said, oh, you have a 5-year program. I said, well, I never thought about it that way. And he said, so you're 72? I said, yeah. He said, I'm 74, and I have the first of two more 25-year projects.
Oh, wow.
So what is your 25-year project?
Wow, are you asking me that?
Yeah,
or was that the answer?
That was directed at you, right?
That was and I was like,
me.
Wow.
And that was like a 2x4 to my forehead, which literally changed my life.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Because now I'm in pursuit of defining what that 25 years is. What is it? What kind of commitment do I have to what kind of contribution to the world in 25 years?
What's a legacy going to be, right?
Well, you talk about legacy, but it's legacy is something that you look at after it's done. I'm looking at the fun of getting there, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, good health is not something just to feel better tomorrow. It's be ready for 25 years. And that's where Dave Asprey, who's one of Dan's students, and Bulletproof Coffee makes a huge amount of sense.
Yeah.
It's also, you know, exercise is not something just so that I can sleep better at night. It's to prepare my body for this next 25 years and beyond.
Yeah.
And then the imagination is freed up, right? Because when you think about 25 years in 90-day quarterly steps, right?
Yep.
Do you know how many that is? That's 100. That's 100 quarters.
Yep.
And that means that you only have to progress 1% a quarter. to get to that 25-year goal.
That's awesome.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's the wheels are turning. changes the perception, right?
Just changes the whole world about how we do it.
Yeah.
All right. Now it's like, oh, I don't have to get that done tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's not procrastination. It's there's no pressure.
Yep.
I can wait until I find the right people.
Yeah.
And then we can talk.
Very well.
And it's looking at how we're going to make the significant changes. And I was listening, driving over here today to Naveen Jain. Do you know Naveen? Have you heard of Naveen?
He's a client.
He's a client. All right. Yeah. Excellent. Well, yeah. Viome, right?
Yep.
All right. So Naveen Jain and I met. I haven't met him personally, but it's through Peter Diamandis up in Santa Monica, who is one of Dan's students, and Dave Asprey, and so I was listening to Naveen's new podcast called Moonshots.
Yep.
And he's speaking. He's got on his moonshot. He's got his coach that's had for 20 years.
Sure.
And this fella is talking about the changes that people can make in the world. He's talking about identifying 1,000 of the best people, the most equipped young people, putting them together so that they can then change the world.
Awesome.
So it's not for me, it's not a matter of what's my legacy going to be. I don't really care about my legacy. What I care about is what is going to fuel me for the next 25 years.
Yeah. What's going to get you out of bed in the morning?
That's right. Right. That's right. That's yeah. Right. Even though I'm getting a full 8 hours of sleep at night.
Yeah, right. There you go. I need to be getting full yes. 8 hours. I need to get back to that.
Well, all right. So tell me, what are you excited about for the next 6 months?
Oh, geez. Well, I think in my landscape, from an agency standpoint, Amazon's new, you know, what they call OTT, over-the-top kind of television mindset advertising is extremely... extremely relevant if you look at, you know, cord nevers and cord cutters, to be able to advertise to them, mm-hmm. Especially with the audiences that we've been talking about. This is a phenomenal way for brands to get back to being top of mind. And the cool part about that with regard to Amazon is you can, from a targeting standpoint, begin to identify lifestyles instead of just painting a big broad brush and putting it on every television for every show and things of that nature. It can get really granular and refined and hyper-targeted so that it's extremely relevant, which improves their experience, by the way, with your ad and putting your brand top of mind. But then the fun side of it, on the back side, is if we could actually look at some analytics to see how well it performed. And that's something relatively new, right? In a digital mindset. So that's number one. I think we are about to launch our own kind of deals and review site ourselves called pricebreaks.com. That for me is really exciting in the mindset that we want to kind of be a one-stop destination for the everyday shopper to identify the best deals, but also reviews. And I saw a gap. Again, I saw something missing in the third-party editorial review landscape, as well as within the deal site kind of deal promoter type landscape. And I kind of want to marry those two together. So that's pretty exciting. And then for me, I think tying it all together with software that brings in all those data points to be able to help a brand understand what the landscape looks like of whether their advertising's working or whether they're growing organically, is their brand reach growing, all of that. Those are the three things that for me are the most exciting in the next, you know, 6 months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, talk to me about the philosophy of advertising. I was with a fellow yesterday, the CPA, and he was he's a good friend, and he was talking about moving his business forward, enlarging his business. And he was talking about the process, I was asking about his process, and so he's beginning to think about it, put it together. And he said, well, of course, here is where I would tell them about what I do. And, and for him, it was way up front.
Mm-hmm.
And what I began to hear from him was that advertising for him meant telling them what I can do.
Sure.
What I said to him was, that's going to get in the way of a sale.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
What you really want to know is, what are the issues that they have?
Yeah.
Now, it might be that you can help them articulate those issues by the quality of the questions that you ask. But you first have to find out what problems they have.
Yep.
Right? And what they might want to solve if they believe that was possible.
Yeah.
And for me, my sense in business is that most people who have not bought from me don't know that it's possible to solve the problems
right.
that they have. I mean, they've gone through enough solutions or programs that didn't work to kind of anesthetize them or to inoculate them. So it's like, well, I don't know it'll work. So
yeah.
And so helping them to articulate their own issues.
Sure.
Way before I even begin to suggest these are ways that they could be solved. Now, is it possible that there could be advertising agencies like that?
I like the mindset of going back to that Simon Sinek Golden Circle video. It's in his book, Start With a Why, right? Mm-hmm. If you start with a marketing message and or an advertising message that helps explain to an audience why, and for us in that landscape, it's what's the problem that we're going to help you solve,
mm-hmm.
That's a much more powerful message than the upfronting loading them with a what. This is what I do,
mm-hmm.
right? If they don't understand why they need what he does, then in that direction, I largely go down the path of advertising with a fun call to actions that we create and the creative design stuff that we do with my creative team, talking about the why,
mm-hmm.
Talking about the benefits versus the features, if you will, right? So that, for me, is where I have a lot of fun with advertising. I think for me, it's helping a brand tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we get to leverage where an endemic audience, by the way, for me is a manufacturer of a product that goes on a retail shelf, right? For me to get to help that brand tell their story to an audience that otherwise didn't know about them or is considering something that's far less superior because it's just a Me Too product that had a logo slapped on it from overseas, right? For me to help a brand tell their story is fun. I think that's the fun part of advertising that I like to get a kick out of, as well as helping the audience understand the why and then identifying the right audience so that it's relevant and it's not a nuisance to the shopper or the audience that we're trying to target per se, right? It's more of like, oh, hey, thanks, because I just discovered something new I didn't know that I needed and it solves my problem. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fun of the advertising that we like to do.
So let me take us into a whole different world for the next couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Speaking from the context that we've been talking about today,
uh-huh.
when I look at the United States right now with where we are, I believe we've lost our brand.
Okay.
All right. How would we go about selling people, not a political party,
mm-hmm.
not a particular direction,
sure,
but reestablishing the brand that allows that political conversation to happen? How would we go about that?
I think when I think of my childhood and I think about the way I perceived America as a kid through schools and kindergarten all the way through, it's America was the gigantic melting pot, right? And it was a place where dreams could come true. And if I had to go advertise America, it would be a place that dreams can come true. And I think that for anybody and everybody has a dream, right? And that messaging would then attract a lot more people to come to America to make that dream a reality.
Yes, okay. And that I think that was true about the come to America attracting that. What I'm interested in is come back. Now, this is not make America great again. It's not
okay.
that. But it's come back to who we are.
Yeah. Okay, and now the question to me is how do we shape
a
message?
Talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, what would that be like?
I think there'd have to be an element where we felt that we had lost some of that. I think some of that today in an entrepreneurial landscape, as an example, in terms of fulfilling dreams and being a place where dreams can come true. I don't think that we've gotten too far off the beaten path from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at YouTube, look at all the billionaires literally that have been created, and Apple being Apple and Amazon both being in the trillion-dollar valuation club, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think if we were to try to say that we needed to bring back that, whether it be an entrepreneurial spirit, I absolutely would go down the path of, I don't know, I think selling the concept of the dream. I think that...
Well, when I grew up, And I heard that also from Bill Naveen's coach today. He grew up in Bismarck, North Dakota,
okay,
in a trailer park.
Okay.
All right. But he said, I grew up in a community.
Yeah.
All right. I grew up in, my father was, my great uncle was the entrepreneur. My father was an entrepreneur. My grandfather was an entrepreneur. But we were not wealthy, but we lived in a community.
Sure.
And that community looked out after each other. Now, I recognize looking back on it that there was an element of racism there. It was a separate, there was,
sure.
It was not all wonderful.
Right.
But the world I grew up in did have links and connections to each other. And there was a sense of, we are building this small town of Edinburgh, Texas, into something.
Sure.
I mean, one of the funniest things I think, but it's illustrative of what they did, is they said, you know, they were not the largest community in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas, but they were fighters.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, every community needs to have a Rotary Club, a Lions Club, and a Kiwanis Club. But there weren't enough people to be in all. So some of them joined two of them.
Yeah.
Because we got to have that. All right. There's something about that, building a local community, a purpose for a community. That is what I think is missing today.
Okay.
How could we invite people to do that without selling something?
Well, first step, tell them to turn off their TV. Media is always trying to polarize and separate community, mm-hmm, right? I think that's my own personal belief. I think the media does a phenomenal job at polarizing and causing rifts,
mm-hmm,
right? And that drives me crazy. So turn off the TV. From that standpoint, today's communities are largely digital. So there are forum communities. There's a car club forum community for BMWs and M3s. There's a car club forum community for Audis and the S-Series cars, right? There's a forum for just about any from a digital community standpoint.
So the notion of bowling alone, right, might only be the passing of a particular way of being in a community.
Yeah. So being in a community, yes. I think,
I mean, that was Putnam's book, from the Harvard educator who wrote the book called Bowling Alone.
I missed that book.
All right.
But educate me for a second.
Well, what he said was, you know, there was a time when lots of people were in bowling leagues.
Sure.
And he said, that's not there. You could look at the Rotary Club, you could look at all these service clubs. They're all struggling in America. Now, in other parts of the world, they're growing tremendously because this is seen as the way to build community. But in America right now, they're all having difficulty bringing in people. And that was Putnam's point, was this guy's bowling alone. Why is he bowling alone? Well, because he's nostalgic for the time when there was a community there,
yeah,
but it's not there anymore.
Got it.
And he was, you know, ain't it awful kind of stuff. But what I'm hearing from you is, okay, so we're not bowling alone, but we're in forums together.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of that. There's even, you know, in video game type community happening. Do I think Ready Player One, the movie, could become a reality? I mean, with the advent of Fortnite, it's possible. I'm not going to say very possible because I don't want to sound overly optimistic. Because that's actually, I shouldn't say optimistic, but I want to say that it's on the horizon in the next 5 years. But that kind of community also exists, where people are going online to have community. Look at World of Warcraft was one of those.
My grandson.
Right.
My grandson, growing up, his family, my son and daughter-in-law's family, World of Warcraft was their world. I mean, they had setups in every bedroom, and they would all be on it together every night. And what I observed with Gregory is, Gregory, at 14, 15, began to lead raids. I mean, of course they went to the top, whatever that top level was, but then it was, now we're going to have a guild and we're going to have raids. Well, he began to lead raids, and when I investigated, people on his guild were, they 40, 50, 60 years old,
yeah,
and here's a 16-year-old, yeah, leading
them. The charge, yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. He was learning, yeah, leadership skills.
Yep.
Now, he went through his wander about phase.
Sure.
But then he came back and became a firefighter. He is,
yeah,
now, he, and just this week he became an engineer. He was a paramedic, and now he's an engineer for LA County Fire.
Awesome.
Now, that is directly out of those experiences of leading people digitally.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, when we talked about community, and I don't disagree with you at all. I think community is a great way for, you know, America to be put back into the mindset of, I hate to use that phrase, make America great again, because that's awful. But I just want to go down the path of, you know, looking at communities now digital. Mm-hmm. We've been, like, to your point earlier about transformation, in the landscape of community means digitally now, and it started back with World of Warcraft. It started back with, you know, Halo. It started in that area. And then, of course, then in the late 90s, there were AOL chat rooms, and that was your digital community, right? So I think here we are 20 years after chat rooms kind of surfaced. That's like community. And by the way, it's not just U.S. community. It's global community.
But think about what Facebook did. Facebook divided us. We had community, but we were at different places, and we didn't talk to each other, and their hall of mirrors helped us to think the world is two different places or multiple different places. And I wonder, what could we do digitally to bring people who believe they're in different worlds together to talk? I mean the most extreme right now is the paralysis in Congress. I mean, they're not talking to each other. They're not talking at each other. It's a whole different world. I mean, it's just a world of power. To me, unfortunately, no matter who wins the presidential election, nothing's going to change. It's just going to be, we just change the seats that we're sitting in, but we're still fighting the same battles. And to me, a way of getting out of that is to ask, what are the real problems we want to solve? And how do we have a conversation with the people who make those decisions? And how do we have that conversation together, not to score points,
right,
but to discover what's the real issue?
Let's solve that.
Well, before we can solve it, we have to agree that's the real problem.
Sure.
Right? And when we all agree that's the real problem, only then can we talk about what are the ways, the various ways that we could solve them, and what makes sense. What do we have resources for in time, money, and energy to pursue? But it's until we can actually ask the question and agree upon the answer, what's the real problem here? We can't even begin to talk about solutions.
Yeah. That's a very big question.
And that's what I want to challenge the advertising community to start thinking about.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to stop the consumerism railroad train.
Sure.
But what about spending some time transforming this dysfunctional community that we have?
Okay. And that is a big question that I'm not going to immediately go off and answer. I think,
but you and I are going to keep talking about this.
I think so. So there's a bigger conversation to have for sure.
That's right. So it's been an exciting time. I'm glad that you've been here. Tell the audience what you would like them to know, how they can get in touch with you if they want to.
I think my sign-off would be check out pricebreaks.com. That's coming. That's going to be a site for everybody to check out amazing deals on. Otherwise, you can check out the Channel Bakers YouTube channel to learn more about us and some of the projects we care about, like Together We Rise and bringing children separated through the foster system back together to do fun days at Disneyland, things of that nature. If I had to self-promote for a second, there it was.
Okay. How about young entrepreneurs looking to find a community and a skill-building place?
Oh, wow. I think for many of them, if they haven't heard of Gary Vee, that's a guy they can learn from extensively. I think that's a great place to start. I would venture to say Blinkist as an app. There are millions of books that get a Cliff Notes version in a very audible sense. I can't tell you how many Blinkist books I go through in a given month, but it definitely helps with the education piece that they may feel that they're missing, and it might be in a format that they're more open to understanding. So Blinkist does Cliff Notes versions of all the great books, like How to Win Friends and Influence People, How to Make a Friend in 90 Seconds or Less. There's so many books I could rattle off, but I think that would be a great place for them as a resource.
Excellent. Well, Josh, thanks so much for being with us. It's been a lot of fun conversation, and I know it's going to be the first of many.
Awesome. Thanks.
So,
good to be here.
Here we are, another great resource we have in Southern California to help businesses and entrepreneurs thrive.
Awesome.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.